Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, future Brody. Chiming in, a little PSA for this episode of See Also. There's an extended cut over behind the paywall on Patreon for our Hoghive subscribers. So if you're not signed up yet, patreon.com/seeAlso. You get things like ad-free episodes every week, early access to any events, live shows, screenings that we're doing, and slightly cheaper tickets as well. There's also some bonus episodes over there. And as of recently, we're putting the slightly longer versions of the podcast up for the Patreon subscribers. So this week, you're going to get some Izzy Beach advice on writing a novel while working a full-time job. And it's very motivating. And I personally have taken a lot from it. So head over to patreon.com/seeAlso for a slightly longer version of this week's episode. Welcome back to See Also. This is just Brody right now. Kate's not here this week, but I'm joined by a very special guest to talk about two very special movies. Our guest on the podcast today is Isabel Beach. Hi, Izzy.
Hi.
Izzy is a writer from Melbourne and the author of a true See Also fave, her novel Sunbathing. Today we're going to talk about another auteur. And Izzy, I want a little bit of backstory because you brought this to me with the kind of sell that we could get 5 episodes of a podcast out of it. We are only doing one so far.
So far.
Who knows? Maybe that will change. You wanted me to watch the J-Lo movies, plural, that just came out.
I did.
Tell me a little bit about your experience of these films because you've now watched them both twice.
Yeah. And I honestly am gunning for a third time because I don't, anyway, whatever, we'll get into that. But I feel like there's still so much more to see.
There's a lot to discover.
There's a lot. I feel like, yeah, it's almost like I've just gotten into like acid for the first time and I'm just kind of like, you know what, maybe I'll do it again this weekend.
But also like, you have to tell everyone about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's naturally.
Yeah.
The progression. What happened was I was in Dalesford at my friend's house. Me and Chessie and Danny were having a movie night and we put on, I can't remember what it's called, but we put on that movie that's like got Julia Louis-Dreyfus and it's not enough said. It's like the rom-com with the evil guy from Outlander. I should have looked this up.
Oh, like the new Nicole Holofcener film?
Yes.
Fuck. Yeah, Kate and I both, it was on both our top 10s from last year.
Really?
The new Nicole Holofcener film, okay. Which is called, I'm Googling.
Oh, God.
You Hurt My Feelings.
See, it's a very forgettable title.
Yeah.
We were watching that and we had like this collective horrible day and we were like, this is not enough. Like, this is not penetrating the vibe enough. It's like, it's too indie and gentle. We were like, we really need something to like, literally,
you
mind fuck us out of this. like weirdness.
You couldn't just have a vibe. You needed like a chainsaw to the brain.
100%. So we were looking on Amazon Prime. I guess kind of should have redacted that because we hate, but we were at a someone else's house, so it's not our fault.
We're not paying for it.
We're not just paying for it. We're just using it and enjoying it. And so we saw that J-Lo's This Is Me Now, the film, not the documentary, the feature film,
yep,
was out and on there. And we were like, absolutely, yes.
Yep.
Like 100% this is the one. And yeah, we watched it and it was just
this
like,
is us now.
This is us now, I guess. This is us ... now. Or is it the, are the dot dot dots after now?
No, it's in the middle.
Okay.
Because it's named after her album from the first time she dated Ben. Yeah. This is me then,
mm-hmm.
which was an excellent album.
Yeah.
So you would think to reference such a good album again,
mm-hmm.
you'd be like, this is going to be her masterwork.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in many ways it is. Maybe not in the ways that she intended, but in some ways.
Yeah. So you called it a feature film. There is then a documentary that comes out like immediately after on the same day.
Yeah.
That's the making of This Is Me Now.
Yeah.
Called The Greatest Love Story Never Told.
Yeah.
Which is the making of This Is Me Now. And if you were to watch The Greatest Love Story Never Told without having seen the film that it's documenting the making of, you would think it's The Heart of Darkness and This Is Me Now is her Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
This Is Me Apocalypse Now. It's wild how much went into this film that she documented financially, $20 million of her own money, dollars, before she sold it to Jeff Bezos.
Mm-hmm.
So really whoever's paying for that Amazon Prime account is supporting J-Lo.
100%. And I truly cannot imagine a world in which they gave him more than $8 million.
Yeah. Well, this thing's going to be scrubbed. You know, like movies are speaking of Nicole Holofcener, like a series she made with Catherine Hahn a few years ago is just wiped from like Binge/HBO streaming services, despite it being funded by HBO. So like there's no world in which this is like lasting on streaming.
Unless we start a movement with this podcast episode and it gets played at the Astor Theater every Friday night for the next 25 years, which is ultimately my goal.
Yeah. Okay. There's an ulterior motive. So, so when you go and see like The Room or Rocky Horror Picture Show, like people have like the things that they like throw at the screen or like Rocky Horror, they put newspaper over their heads for the rain scene. Like, what are we doing for This Is Me Now?
I immediately know. At This Is Me Now, and hopefully people who are listening to this have seen it, but if not, then I'm about to ruin some stuff.
We're wearing circular sunglasses. We're all wearing like Oppenheimer glasses like she wears when she's working in the heart factory
sequences.
You also
have to wear a tank top.
Yeah.
But then people carry around buckets of mud and everybody touches them and says if they're good mud or not.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you can throw mud kind of. Maybe it can get a bit dirty.
And you bring your gay best friend. But then also at the end, he marries a woman.
Everybody brings their best friends, seven of them, and they're all 20 years younger than them.
Yeah.
That's what everyone has to do.
You're perfect. So we're all J-Lo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone decides who's J-Lo, and you get a bunch of people who are a lot younger than you to come. And all of your friends have to have a very strange personality trait.
Yeah. Well, remember when that news story came out a few years ago that was like, J-Lo doesn't cast... Is it Libras or Pisces? You know, like she has one.
I never saw that.
I'm Googling again.
Thank you.
J-Lo dances star sign. I don't know anything about astrology. And so I'm really bad when it's like, did Jennifer Lopez fire all Virgo dancers is the first Google result. Wow. According to Heather Morris, noted Glee alumnus and former Beyonce backup dancer, J-Lo once dismissed all Virgo dancers from an audition. This was years ago. She said she was on a podcast called Just Sayin'.
She just said that.
And so, J-Lo famously has some feelings about astrology,
mm-hmm.
which really inform this movie.
In the most unexpected and almost like impossible to comprehend type of way. Should we... I mean, Sorry.
Do we need plot? We need a bit of plot.
We may not need plot, but I feel like we need some overview. Okay, because I don't imagine anybody that's listening to this has actually seen it yet. I don't really know anyone who's seen it. I'm just slowly trying to get the word out there.
Yeah, you're on the campaign. You're on the street team.
I'm literally heard two I see at this point.
This is guerrilla marketing.
There is one movie that this is me now, the feature film that is like quite steampunk and like surrealist and like very much so. You can tell it's J-Lo's like. Baby, it's all she's making all the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there were some decisions that needed to be made based on finances, but ultimately, it's like that is her passion project, her creative eye is all over it.
And when I mentioned before that you called it a, I think I got off track, but you called it a feature film. But in the making of, they go to great lengths to say this is not a music video, but it's kind of like. Lots of little music videos with like interludes.
Yes, correct. It's like it's a visual album, but she doesn't want you to consider it that way because it's directed by her like longtime collaborator, like music video director guy, whatever.
Dave something. Who's like a legend. He made like the Missy Elliott, like the little girl in the tracksuit breakdancing video.
Anytime I think of her, I now think of her in like – as an adult when she did that at the VMAs or whatever, and it was like really funny. So there's that movie and then there's the documentary, and the documentary is like, I would say, I mean, so the movie that J-Lo made is like quite, I think, special because it's psychotic, you know. It's special because it's like nothing you've ever seen before, and you will laugh so much and have so much fun and be like, what is going on? It's very strange.
Like it's like take a gummy with your friends because this is, I say this with love, mental.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're having a horrible day, watch that. And you will honestly be completely taken out of your body and your mind. The other movie, the documentary, is like, it's actually a very well done and like
it's quite
technically
good.
Perfect
and
documentary.
There's so much Ben in it, which
there's
is...
so much Ben. I feel like Ben has his hands all over this movie because it's like trying to find the angle that is going to somehow make the movie that he's realized his wife has made.
Yeah.
How can we make that seem more than it is? Like less crazy or more, like more ambitious, less crazy, like more artistic and kind of like, she, you know, she's off with the Pixies, but it's so endearing. You know, like it's like the documentary.
He's all in on her.
Yeah. Oh my God. They're both so.
Like his taste level is telling him this is not going to be good.
Yeah.
But his love for her is like, you have to make this to like exercise whatever is in you that needs to get out.
Totally. It's, we've got to try and make that 20 mil back.
Yeah.
It's so that, so that's, I feel like that's the, and then in terms of the movie, the This Is Me dot 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 now.
Yeah.
The plot.
Yeah.
Very hard to explain. I don't even think we should necessarily bother.
No, but also the like tagline that they're using to sell it is a basically like Jennifer Lopez at her most raw, kind of like excavating her public persona, her like sex and love addiction, and like the relationship that she's returned to after all the like they they're kind of selling it as like the Bennifer story.
Totally. Which like
is a lie.
Which is a lie. But it's, I mean, it's true in terms of like, you know, if I was to go to Meredith Music Festival and take like 5 tabs of acid and then like walk down to the hill and like tell somebody my life story, like I am telling you my life story, but you don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. And you don't, you're not with me there, but I'm doing the best I can. Do you know
what
I mean?
Like I'm trying to be with you. And that's what we're trying to be with Jennifer.
Yeah. I'm trying to sit with you while that sun rises.
We're trip sitting her.
We actually are.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed. I want to do it for the rest of my life.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Yeah, yeah. It's really unbelievable. Like, it's kind of unbelievable to watch a celebrity so out of sorts. I'm not going to say out of touch because I don't know if she was ever in touch, but so out of sorts with the world in 2024 at a time when it could be quite easy for her to have enough people. Like, Jane Fonda is trying to yank her back down to earth, being like, I don't know if this is what you fully need to be doing.
Yeah.
And she is just so adamant, or like not defensive. She's just kind of like, it's rolling off her back.
Totally.
Like, she's so delusion famous.
Yeah.
That she's like, this is absolutely normal for me to be doing this.
Yes. 100%.
That's her vibe.
I think that
making a movie that is entirely CGI green screen, like choreographed by Paris Goebbels, she of Justin Bieber's best music videos.
For one scene though, and then she had different, like, she had different choreographers.
Did
all
Paris
the way
Goebbels
through.
Only do the
she
factory?
Did, yeah, she did the factory.
Okay, so also there's so many dance sequences in this movie, and the whole vibe is like, J-Lo might be 55, but she can still break it down with the jikas.
Yeah.
And she is, and she looks amazing, but it's crazy because it's like a music video. There's a song playing. She's not singing it.
No.
She's just doing the getting on the ground, touching mud, like you said.
Yeah.
But then you don't hear anything because she's not emoting or singing, and everything's filmed really far away. So you just get like a huge green screen scene with like steampunk factory in the background. But all you hear is like either stomping or clapping or the swishing of clothes.
Yes.
Always swishing.
I was watching, so Chessie, my friend, I was watching it with the first time, and the second time I watched it with two actors, and both times the people who have worked in film and TV were like, the sound in this in these movies is crazy.
It's wild.
Like, it's so wild. And also, this is a digression, but the funniest thing that happened the second time I was watching it with Maria Angelico.
Shout out,
love. And there was like a J-Lo had posted, you know how there's the scene at the end of This Is Me Now where she's like dancing in the rain?
Yes, it's like the fourth rain scene.
There's so much melodrama and it's incredible.
There's
and
one scene
so
where she's in the rain burning letters.
I love.
In the rain.
I love
burning
that
letters.
In her like completely monogrammed house, like mansion.
It's the, Gucci monogram pattern, but instead of the double G, it's J-Lo. It's J-Lo. It's really good.
I don't know if she is trying to like convince us that she lives in these incredible mansions in real life, or if it's like meant to be art and she's like, look, I'm so lonely in my mansion type of Doja Cat vibe.
I think it's that, because the first time we see her in a mansion, it's made of glass and a man is punching all around. And he's like a Libra, which is, I guess, is bad because she walks out of a glass house that it looks like a microchip.
Yeah.
And because you're seeing it from
it
like
one
the
of those
sky
phones that were around in like the 2000s where you can see all the insides.
Yes.
It looks like that.
But because she also, this scene, she wakes up in jeans. She gets out of bed and she's wearing full jeans.
Yeah. Love that.
And then the man she's sleeping with, also there's a, like a kind of Fox News anchor on the TV, but it's Ben Affleck in like heavy prosthetics.
Yeah.
The funniest part of the movie.
That's the one part that I will never, ever be. No, as long as I live, I don't think I'll ever reconcile. It doesn't, for me, like, I understand what happened to make that happen, but there's no reason for him to be a far right Fox News guy.
No.
He could have been anything. Why couldn't he be like a motivational speaker or like, like a peace and love guy or like anything that would tie in with the story? There's no reason for him to be like a shock jock.
He's makeup wise made to look like skinny Trump.
Yeah.
He's put in like a Fox News context, but all he's doing is reading aloud like Google, like the top Google searches. He's like, we used to ask, what is love? And now we're asking, am I pregnant?
Yeah.
And then, it's like funny. It's the funniest part of the movie. And then a man comes in who is the Libra that she's dating, who like, she says something about like, oh, I want to encourage you. And he's like, encourage. And then is like abusive to like physically abusive.
He does a lot of punching of walls.
And yeah, so they're in this massive house that looks like a microchip. If like the Umansky group sold like microchips, it's all glass. And then she walks out and goes, fuck Libras. And it's, it zooms out and it's in like a normal American suburb. It's very bizarre.
It's crazy.
But then yeah, her monogrammed house later is like, it's so big because she's so rich and so alone.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up because I wasn't fully sure. I, like sometimes as you're watching the movie, you're like, I can't tell which of these things is an artistic choice or is like, or which is like, you desperately need me to see you this way. Like she's always so made up. She's got heaps of makeup on. She's like always looking really hot. Like even at the, like at Fat Joe's therapy office.
She's always putting on the biggest fur coats after therapy.
Yeah. Like, that was, that got like a uproarious laugh from the room that I was watching.
It's really good.
It was so fun.
Well, it's like the Hustlers scene where she like wraps her fur coat around what's her face.
Maybe it was the throwback.
Maybe it was. But wait, you were talking about the rain scene.
Maria. So we then found this video like after we'd watched it of J-Lo saying that that rain scene was like the hardest scene to shoot. She's like saying that she says two amazing things. One thing she says is that was the hardest scene of the whole movie to shoot. Like that rain was making my clothes so heavy. I could like hardly move my legs. And then the second thing she says is, oh, this is my favorite line. And it's when she turns to Fat Joe with her little umbrella and she goes, never give up, Joe, or whatever his name is. And then, and we were like, okay, that's crazy. That's your favorite line. But also Maria was like, I don't know how to tell you guys this, but there is, it's, when you get fake rain on a movie set, it's just like regular rain. Like you can move your legs. Like there's nothing hard. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. You can still move. Do you know what I mean? Like she was just like, I just don't know.
J-Lo was talking about it like she was filming the Titanic.
100%.
And like water was like 100%. Weighing her down. And it was a traumatizing experience.
And I think it just speaks to how delusional she is, like in the best way, because for her, everything is like the craziest thing that's ever happened, you know, like her being falling in love. This is why she is the way she is, and hence why the movie needs to exist, because she has to explain why she's been married four times and this one's real.
Yes.
But like she, everything that happens to her, she has main character syndrome. Everything that happens to her is like the biggest thing that has ever happened in the history of the world, like including being rained on by a rain machine.
Yes.
And it's like, I love it. I love you.
Yeah. She's like, you know, I'm here at, like at one point Fat Joe tells her she has to go to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, which is great. I did get a bit bored and start looking at my phone, and then I looked up and they were all dancing on their folding chairs in the auditorium. But I feel like, okay, so she went to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous because her whole, so the movie is like her whole deal is that she and Ben broke up, you know, just a normal breakup. People break up all the time. They broke up because like the movie they were in like very publicly flopped.
Yeah.
And they were the most famous couple. I don't know if Gen Z will ever know this. I don't know if Gen Z listens to this podcast. I can't imagine there's much in it for them, but they were truly the most famous tabloid couple.
The portmanteau of celebrity names was invented for them.
Google Images was invented because she wore that Versace dress and people wanted to see it more.
Right, love.
And remember like J-Lo insuring her butt was like, that was huge. 2000s culture.
Yeah.
She was like it. And also the music was really good.
Music was great. Stolen, but great.
Who'd she steal it off?
Oh, don't even get me started. That's a whole other podcast. Just you do your Googling when I leave and we will see. She is like, she's notorious for like,
oh no,
Puff Daddy, who should also be redacted right now.
Yeah.
So you can bleep that out. He like stole a bunch of songs that like, you know, Ashanti or like, you know, better artists wrote, and then let J-Lo kind of have them, like lots of demos from like much cooler, more talented women. And then J-Lo just kind of was like that, like snake in the grass, taking all the demos and then singing a little bit over them sometimes, but you can still hear most of their
Oh my God. Backing
vocals. And
And the deep irony is that all of J-Lo's music in that era were songs called like I'm Real.
Yeah, exactly. Which brings me to,
yeah,
I know you have notes, but her obsession with the Bronx.
No one would have known I have notes, but also.
Now you're going to look like a fucking nerd. I'm so sorry.
Just because there's so much ground to cover and I didn't do things like cover the plot up the top.
Yeah, true.
Okay, well, the Bronx. Yes.
It doesn't matter how many notes either of us were to ever write about this, but we would never.
No.
We would never stay on topic.
So J-Lo went to, okay, so she went to Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous. She learned about astrology. She also learned about, she went to therapy and learned about her inner child and then essentially was like, I'm going to make this movie. I'm just a little girl from the Bronx.
Yes. And all of those things are plot points in the movie also.
It only goes for like 50 minutes. You would think with all this ground she covers, it's actually kind of a miracle.
In some ways it feels like it's 3.5 hours and in other ways it feels like it's 10 minutes.
I checked my phone and was like, surely this is almost over. And it was 19 minutes in. And then I realized that the credits go for 12 minutes. Yeah. And so I did get a little break early.
Those credits, 100% made by AI.
Yeah.
Like
the whole set. That's the one thing they didn't cover in the making of is like who designed the sets. Because they're filming everything in front of green screens. And she's like, I just can't communicate to everyone what my vision is and how amazing this is going to look when it's all done. And I was like, show them a sketch so they can say, no, I don't want to be in this.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think those people existed. It was just her and a friend and a computer.
Yeah. Okay. The Bronx. Sorry.
The Bronx is like,
it's the fifth character.
100%. I mean, it always is. She cannot let go the fact that she spent some time in the Bronx. She needs people to know she's from there because it's so essential to her little kind of B-girl personality that she loves to whip out every now and then.
On the six.
Oh, my God. And so it's in the movie, the feature film, dare I say, and it is honestly portrayed like it's fucking, you know, Casablanca. Like it's literal cobblestone streets. Yeah. There's like smog in the air. She's like got a coat and she's like walking through. I mean, like they are dreamy sequences, but it is so over the top. But then also there's
It really is like Casablanca. She gets off a train and it's the subway.
It feels like 1934. But yeah,
there's like smoke blowing. It's as if there's troops heading home on the street below her. She's so wearing a trench coat and sunglasses
at night. She's wearing a Gucci Adidas trench coat, which many of the garments are. But then there's also the like sister scene to that for me in the doco where she's like in the gym and she pulls her hair out and she like fluffs it. And she's like, she looks like shit.
Wait, I have the quote. I wrote it down.
Oh my God, please. Yeah, I won't do it justice.
She's been in the gym. She's been working out and she pulls her hair out of her ponytail and it looks like, you know, when we get our hair sweaty and then we pull it out of a ponytail and it's all a bit fucked and she's got product left over in it.
Totally fucked.
It looks fucked. But she says like, taking my hair out like this, I'm like that little girl who's 16 in the Bronx running up and down the street. Wild little girl.
Oh my God.
Wild little girl.
Like,
and this is right after instructing the little girl who's playing her childhood self, who she cuddles in the film. She asks them to put more dirt on her face. Like she's an little orphan Mary Poppins.
She's addicted to us thinking that she's a little orphan Annie. She went to a Catholic all-girls private school.
Yeah.
She is fine. Her life was not hard knocks. It was like normal and regular. But because she grew up in
the Bronx.
The borough of the Bronx.
The block.
Yeah, the block. She always refers to the block even now, even all these years later. And it's like, what block?
Yeah.
What block? That like, I get it. It was a cool motif that you were using for something. And like, I'm sure it had meaning. But like, at this point, give it up.
Yeah.
We all get it.
Yeah.
You grew up in New York.
Yeah. And there's a bit where she like arrives back home on the block and all her friends who, like you said, are 20 years younger than her, they're all just standing around outside a car.
They are standing on the street because we're supposed to think that her friends from the Bronx are like, you know, fucking drug dealers and like, you know, rappers.
The block.
Yeah. They're people from the block, but they're also like one amazing thread through, mainly the feature film. I would say less so the documentary. I think the documentary is more self-aware. But in the feature film, there's this thread of like everyone loves her. Like everyone is obsessed with her. She goes to therapy, like group therapy, and everyone is just enraptured with her story and like, you know, interpretive dances to her pain. Then like she goes to talk to like her friends when they try and do like an intervention with her about her having a love addiction. And then she does like this little speech and they're all just like totally changed by this thing that she says. Like every little thing that she does, she's like the thing.
Damn, Jenny, everyone, you're so real.
We're like, holy shit, this girl is so deep.
Yeah.
And then so like she goes to the Bronx and she runs into her old friends and they're all just like so like, oh, you know, like we didn't think we'd be seeing you around here kind of thing. And they're all like hugging and they all love her. It's this insane, there's no tension anywhere.
Anywhere.
There's no room for characters that aren't just like this reflection of her massive ego. It's so funny. And that's why no one is well-rounded or like there's no world to get lost in apart from the visual one, because no one else is real except her, which is like probably why she has this problem in the first place.
Yes. And this is also hitting on something that's so like it's so celeb, right? The idea that like she's been famous for so long that she undeniably thinks that when she leaves a room, everyone just powers down. And like people only exist when they come into contact with her.
Which does happen to me, but probably not her. Like when I leave a room, it's over.
Yeah. And it really is like, I don't know. Did you watch the Selena Gomez quote unquote documentary?
No, I was too scared.
Fully like call coming from inside the house. documentary made from inside the team. Mm. But it really is like she doesn't know how to talk to any, she, when she sits down and talks to her friends, she talks about herself. And I think she thinks that that's what all relationships are, is just
totally
your friends are the people you talk about yourself with.
Yes.
Like it's all so one directional.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that she's been married 4 times, including Ben. In the film, it goes through this like big montage sequence of her like getting married and getting married and getting married. And this project is all this like quote unquote interrogation into like why I am the way I am, why I'm so obsessed with love and getting married. And, but I found my way back to Ben and he's like my why. Mm-hmm. And I think Ben Affleck may be the only person she thinks also has emotions and a life and thoughts. Like he's the only person I think in the world that she's ever interacted with and is like, oh, you're like me.
Totally.
Because everyone else lives to serve her.
She can only do that because he's one of the most famous people in the world.
And they met when they were equally important. Okay, there are two words that we haven't mentioned yet that are very important to the film.
Okay.
Zodiacal Council.
Oh, God.
So
that's the real trippy shit. Once you get to that point, like before you see the Zodiacal Council.
That's where the money went.
That's where the money went. You're going to be like, this movie is the craziest thing I've ever seen. And then that's going to happen. And you're going to feel like you are losing your fucking mind.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you that you're not. It's really happening. You just have to roll with it.
You just got to live through it.
You do.
Did you see Naiad? The movie about Annette Bening as a swimmer.
No.
So she is trying to swim like a very long distance in like open sea water and she's like getting stung by jellyfish at night and like every time she comes up for air her face is all fucked. She's like salt water skin, like so affected by like the elements, understandably. She's also like in her mid-60s, but at some point she just like she loses 10 kilograms every time she does this swim and she attempts it many times. So like there's one time where she just starts hallucinating and like she's like swimming and then she comes up for air and she's like, daddy or whatever, you know, she doesn't say that, but she's like, she's seeing things that aren't there. And Jodie Foster is her best friend and trainer who's wearing like a giant Casio watch and like a bandana, just has to like kind of accept her fantasies. Like it's like, don't wake a sleepwalker. It's like, just let the woman swimming this long
she's
distance
going through something.
Believe what she's seeing and talking to. And there is a little bit of that in the Zodiacal Council. It's like, is this a naiad hallucination or is this real that Jane Fonda, Post Malone, Kiki Palmer,
Kim Petras,
Kim Petras,
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, Jay Shetty, who married she and Ben, apparently, was their like celebrant.
Oh my God, I did not know that.
And who's the woman from, she plays Anthony Anderson's mum in Black-ish and she's Gemini, so there's two of her. I wonder if she got paid twice. Jennifer Lewis.
Did she get paid twice? No, she didn't.
Did I say Post Malone? I said Post Malone.
There's someone else that we're missing as well.
It's fucked up.
And then there's like an actual...
There's a guru. Full guru. She flew in from India. Yeah. Sadhu Guru.
Yeah.
Who there's a scene in the making of where she and Ben are like looking at camera lenses or something. And he's like, this is a good one. She's like, I don't care. And he's like, I know you don't. And then they like kiss. But the guru just like appears on set. And they're just like... directing him and hug, and these people were not on set at the same time. They're all filmed on a green screen, but they essentially represent the 12 astrological signs who sit around a round table in the sky, looking down at basically like a TV.
It's watching her life like it's the most important thing on planet Earth.
And when, spoiler alert, when she finally gets back, she finds herself at the end at the aforementioned hetero wedding of who we thought was her gay best friend. And she realizes that like the true love is within her at all times. So then obviously she meets Ben again right after that. But her shine is so bright that all of the zodiacal council have to put on sunglasses.
Okay. Really important to note that the costuming of the zodiacal council is like literal hot potatoes on Smith Street, $2 shop, like banged some shit to her interns, pulled some stuff together at like the 11th hour.
It's Timu.
It is so Timu. And it's like, it's actually, there's actually a point at which Jennifer Lewis like adjusts her like thing. And I'm like, that is fucking insane. Like, is that where you decided to cut corners? Because you could have cut... getting like some of the most famous people in the world to be here.
Yeah.
Why didn't you do that?
And in the making of doc, they list all the people who have said no.
Oh, it's so divine. Like,
she thought she was getting Taylor Swift be a member of the Zodiacal Council. And like, then you see a cut. She's talking about money and there's like people are asking for more budget and like her agent or manager is having to say to the director, like, I need to be very clear that every time you ask me for more money, it is coming out of her pocket. Like, they're kind of holding her up like she's like Sarah McLachlan being like begging people for money or something, being like, this is who you're hurting when you're asking for more money. And then it's a cut of like Post Malone like dancing in front of a green screen. And I was like, what are your priorities?
Yeah, you're absolutely crazy. I'm so sorry to say, but you are. And like,
I need to give them my budget spreadsheet because they're really, their priorities are all off.
They're all off.
And then there's like a scene in the documentary where like she gets the call saying that Amazon's going to buy this film, which was never guaranteed. She was just making it. And it's so grim to have watched the end result and then go through the making of.
I did instruct you to watch it in the order of feature film into doco.
I had to.
But now what would you say that you should watch it the other way around? Because... do you think you could ever enjoy the feature film if you had seen the doco first?
No. And also you need the reference point of what it is that they're making.
Yeah. So that you can laugh.
Yes. Because they're taking it so seriously.
So seriously. The mud, I feel like, is a really important... I think it's my favorite part of both movies, particularly the documentary part.
I just saw in my notes there's a bit where I say, I swear she could act at one point, like in her career.
Yeah. I also thought that she could dance, but both of these movies have dispelled that for me. But in the documentary, so in the steampunk heart factory from the feature film, there is a scene where they do some dancing in mud. There are actually multiple scenes, but one particular one. And so in the documentary...
a lot of rain, a lot of mud. Makes sense. They go together.
They do. Yeah, rain makes mud. And then in the documentary, there's like... whoever... I'm going to assume it's Ben because it honestly is genius. Someone has taken the liberty of being like, you know, behind the scenes of behind the scenes, like this is going to be your, like your moment and everyone's going to see like what a staunch professional you are and like how much experience you have, but it's also going to be like quirky and memorable. And they are correct, except for the first part. It is like, it just goes to show like it's not, She basically is doing rehearsals. She's the scenes are like, the scene is that she's at this rehearsal studio, and then she, her team wants to show her the mud samples that they've been putting together. And she doesn't have time because she's been there all day, and it's like, you know, 2 a.m. or whatever. And she wants to go home. She promised her husband she'd be home. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to get out of there. And then they follow her. She shuts the door on her little SUV that she gets put in. And then her team runs out and like tries to show her these mud samples in these buckets. And she like sits behind the closed window for a while and then decides, like Celine Dion style, like, okay, I will open this window. And then she starts testing the mud, and just immediately she's like, way too thick, or like, that's perfect, or like, if you just add a little bit of water to the first one, it'll be great. And it's like, it's so fucking camp and amazing, like so dumb. She does not, it does not make her look like a, like, you know, performing arts genius. It makes her look so eccentric and insane.
She and thinks that's her Argo.
100%.
She thinks that's like Ben approving the wigs on Argo.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's so gorgeous. And
yeah.
Then she has the smuggest look on her face when she rolls the window back up and like drives off. It's like, I am like, in her head, she's like, that slayed. She yeah. would be in that car thinking, okay, I just looked like a girl boss, workaholic, fucking can do everything, like mom.
No,
like,
one is going to question that my hands are all over this.
Literally, I even chose the mud and told them how to make it. Like, I am the artistic genius behind this film. Like, I'm amazing.
Yeah.
And it's so fucking cool. It's like, I so laughed funny. So hard. I had tears rolling down my face. And then like, I would think about it like a few days later and just be like, oh my God, like it's so incredible.
Like there are so few opportunities in our lives as like lowly copywriters also that we get to like, yeah. people bring us things to approve.
Yeah, totally.
And next time that happens, it's going to be so satisfying because it's like, this is my mud.
Totally. And I'll be like, you just need to add a little bit of this, but to the first one. I want to make it the most annoying feedback anyone has ever gotten about anything. It's like when you look at the buckets of mud that they're showing her, there's no, like, I'm sure there is a superior mud there, but what she is saying is we're looking for the mud that a dancer would need. This isn't just mud for a movie. It's got to be mud that I can dance in, and it's going to flick up and it's going to look fucking sick.
What kind of mud is in the Heart Factory? Is it only I know the answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the Heart Factory is a fucking factory. Psycho yeah, concept.
That I made up when I was having...
We should mention too, at the start of the movie, the Heart Factory is broken, and then she works so hard in it. All these women wear like welding suits. Oh, yeah,
they're
suits.
All welders.
And then at the end, the Heart Factory is mended, of course.
The important thing is that the Heart Factory is actually, it's a pedal factory. They make pedals there, but she calls it the Heart Factory, even though the heart is like the mechanism that the pet they grow, they make the pedals there to feed the heart so that the heart works. But it's not, they don't make the heart at the factory. They make the pedals at the factory.
Well, yes. So the pedals are growing through flowers in the mud. That's why the mud is important. And there's conveyor belts just with petals on it. But there is also a giant steampunk heart, and there's a sign that says Heart Factory.
Yeah, she wants us to call it that, and so we will, but I am just taking issue with the semantics.
I'm just following the rules of the world, you know.
Yeah, important to, and maybe actually it's not important, but I'm gonna note it anyway, the Heart Factory and you know, like the little girl in the Bronx and like that kind of stuff, it's not even allegory, it's like it's all dreamscape.
Yeah,
and there is real world scape, but you I would say.
Yeah, like when she's mouthing along to The Way We Were, is that real world scape?
Yes, but yes. It's still so fantastical.
Yes.
Like the movie is like a fantasy movie. There's never any point where you're like, I recognize that world.
Oh, no. But it's The Sims. It looks like The Sims.
Yeah, it does. But J-Lo's she probably designed it on there. She probably was on The Sims for it's like Second all Life. Through COVID being like, okay, so this is what I want the Heart Factory to look like. That's what I would have done.
She put in like rosebud, 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 rosebud.
And then she was like, to get the Gucci rose petals. That's what it's going to be. She had all of these like aha moments.
We We haven't mentioned that Ben's only, I don't think it's him on the motorbike, but it represents him that like at the start of the film, she is.
Personally paused it and I think it's him.
You think it is?
Yeah, I think he really was acting in that.
It's just like the side and back of his face. It's kind of like in Gone Girl, how there's just like the side and back of his leg with a bit of dick. Whereas this is just the side and back of his head with just a little bit of nose.
Yeah, face dick.
He's always there's always something peeking around a corner with Ben Affleck. Or Penn Affleck, as her co-writers on this album refer to him.
Oh my God. I just realized we haven't talked about something so important.
What?
Were you on a thread just then? Were you going somewhere specific?
No. I was just like, I was transitioning from my notes about the film to my notes about the making of. And the first one is the box of love letters.
That's where I was about Yes. Oh my God. Oh my God. There is a scene in the documentary where...
We're into documentary mode now, which is, there's so much.
We could do this for hours and hours. There's a scene in the documentary where she's making the album that then becomes the visual album, which they then force everyone to call a movie, and then they make a documentary about the making of that movie. But at the very beginning, they're just in the studio talking about making an album, and she has these like, and it should be said that every single supporting character in the documentary, so in the real world, like at the studio when she's making the album, on set when she's making the movie, the people that are like in her offices like talking to her about stuff, and then the actual characters in the feature film that she makes, every single person looks like they are, I don't know, like on the set of Younger. Like they're all wearing like beanies and like huge bomber jackets, and they're all sitting like with their legs spread and their arms relaxed. Like everyone wants to be a G so bad in J-Lo's world. Like
yes.
It's almost like she deliberately seeks them out. Like those are the only kinds of people she wants to hang out with. Like people that make her feel hard around the edges. Like
they're
all the people in the studio.
But it's all posturing.
100%.
There's no one authentically like of the block.
Absolutely not. Everyone's clothes are designer. Everyone is like putting on this weird accent. Like it's very strange.
Oh my God. What about the interaction with the guy who comes in acting as her one night stand, and he like a gun falls out of his pant, which is a very on the nose reference to Bleep Diddy. And in the making of, when Ben's on set, he's encouraging them to do another Gigli, but he's calling it Jiggly.
Yeah.
And they're both like, ha 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 ha.
Yeah,
ha.
This
that
actor
ruined our lives and relationship. And he's like, that was mad, bro.
Yeah.
You're Ben Affleck. Jiggly.
He literally did a Google before he came to set and he said the first thing that came to his mind. He's never seen
it.
He knows nothing about anything that happened around. He has no idea the bomb that he's dropping in the center of this.
What no one mentions, I've put my hand in the air, is a really important Ben and J-Lo vehicle, which is Jersey Girl.
Agree.
Kevin Smith's Jersey Girl is like very important.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were you going to say about the box of love letters?
The box of love letters is something that she's got such psycho girlfriend energy at all times, but this is when it's like maybe at its peak, where she comes into the studio, which is filled with these like, you know, fucking like Urban Outfitters like style cool people. And they're all working on this album with her, and she's like, I want to show you guys something. And she has this box of letters, and it's like all of the love letters that Ben Affleck ever wrote to her when they were together the first time, and then potentially after as well, which is
there's a
very
lot of stuff in there.
And kind of can't have been just from that, I feel like.
No. Like we know Jennifer Garner got fucked around.
100%.
She's been written out of the history of his life as if he was just – again, powered down when J-Lo left and then like came back to life to marry her and Jennifer Coolidge's
plantation
house. Yeah,
she doesn't get mentioned
once.
Actually, neither of their like she – both of their partners were
no.
Don't exist.
No.
They were all little stepping stones just to get back to this place.
Ben's three kids all look so much like Jennifer Garner.
They do. Yeah, they've really taken no Affleck genes whatsoever.
Also, this project – what do you think? More or less embarrassing than the full Phoenix back tattoo?
I mean, the problem is that even though I think that this project is embarrassing, I'm obsessed with it and I think it's the coolest thing ever.
I wrote in all caps in my notes, Ben rides so hard for her. Like, yeah. He is so all in. And I think that's, like, I actually, I just remembered, I sent my friend a voice memo after watching this, telling her to watch it, the documentary specifically. My friend Georgia, I sent her kind of a deranged voice memo, and I started crying in the middle of this voice memo because I said, this is what I wrote in my notes. In some ways, I think there is a lesson here, LOL. The fear of making something bad can really stop me from making anything. And Ben asks her what success looks like for her in this project. He's like interviewing her off camera in the documentary. And he's like, what does success look like for you? And she says, just making it. I just have to make it. And he's like, there's no world in which you're... She's like, if I fail, it's because I haven't made this thing and stuck to my vision. And even if it's a disaster, it's going to be worth it to me. And I relayed that to my friend and started crying
while I
said it. Because I was like, oh my God, there are so many times when like my inner critic, lol, who's like a little dirty girl running around on the streets.
Totally. Her hair's all messed up all the time.
She's on the block. Like I'm so critical of like how bad something might be that I don't make stuff. And JLo has none of that.
No, she doesn't.
She does not have that self-criticism. And... you know, maybe she could do it a little bit. Maybe I could give her a little mind, take a little of her confidence. But you know, it was like very
inspiring.
If you Freaky
Friday'd, I think you both would come out of it a little bit better.
Yeah. People would be very confused about me interacting with me with J-Lo in my body.
I would really see that movie.
I'd have a great... Oh my God. Imagine if I woke up and... was in bed with Ben Affleck.
Excuse me. I truly
full hair and makeup and jeans.
Yeah, exactly. Tied together by some kind of kabuki. Like, you'll only get that if you've seen it. I would immediately tell Ben to leave and I would masturbate for the rest of my life because she truly has the sickest
body. Yeah.
It is crazy.
It's fucked up.
There's a few scenes in the doco where she's dancing in gray sweatpants and I finally got the gray sweatpants thing. I was like, like it hasn't been doing it for me in on the male body, but now I'm really seeing the power of this item.
Yeah. They're powerful. I did write in my notes, I wonder what it was like to fuck for the first time after 20 years.
Oh my God. Why have I not thought about that yet?
And cause they've been, the way they tell it, they've been pining for each other for 20 years just with other people. Do you watch Southern Charm?
100%.
Like the bizarre J-Lo connection where Madison LaCroix, my queen of Southern Charm, at the end of season, I'm going to say 7, in the reunion, Craig is yelling at her drunk with bad hair and a bad suit. It's his worst. It's his worst moment in the reunion saying, you flew to Miami to fuck a former MLB player.
Yeah.
And she was going, no, I didn't. No, I did not. I never seen that man. And she's adamant that she never saw A-Rod, who was with J-Lo for many years.
Oh, my God.
But Southern Charm, this is a Bravo crossover we needed with the greatest love story never told, that Madison LaCroix of Southern Charm fame was getting DMs from A-Rod and must have talked about it with the cast. They talked about it on the reunion. So then it became public news. And within like a month, Ben and J-Lo were back together. Like she... dumped A-Rod immediately this Madison LaCroix news came out.
Blowing my mind.
Yeah.
First of all, I did not know that that was A-Rod.
Yeah.
Second of all, why did they say a former MLB player about A-Rod, like one of the most famous athletes on the planet? Like that was
he a Yankee?
Red herring. I have no idea. I don't know. Don't ask me. All I know is that he was like really hot back in the day and now he looks kind of weird.
Yeah.
But like a big that is a crazy crossover because I've really only been interested in two things the last like 5 weeks and it's been the J-Lo movie and Southern Charm.
One and the same, baby.
They are the same universe.
We have Madison to thank for Ben and J-Lo rekindling.
Okay, I'm going to send her a DM.
I love her so much. She's the coolest woman in Charleston.
It's not hard. Super hard, but she's doing it regardless.
One thing that didn't get covered in the documentary that I would have loved, and I don't know if J-Lo maybe is aware of it. So maybe that's why it didn't get covered. Is that her acting? So this is a film. She's been in lots of films before. Her oeuvre, her filmography is fixated on weddings.
Totally.
Marry Me, Shotgun Wedding were the two most recent, like COVID, also bizarre. Like she looks like she's just stepped out of like an airbrush studio in every single scene. Like she cannot look like a normal human woman anymore.
No.
And early on in her career, obviously she did The Wedding Planner. Mm-hmm. Made in Manhattan wasn't like wedding industrial complex so much, but like Mother-in-Law, like totally. Her and Jane Fonda being like yep. besties from Mother-in-Law, as they like to tell
they
us.
They really want us to think that they were besties and are besties.
She thinks J-Lo needs help.
100%. She is like, that's another one of her philanthropic like activities. She's like trying to help this like mentally ill woman, and J-Lo thinks that Jane Fonda is just her like her best friend.
She's like my grandma, and Jane Fonda's like, I'm like your counselor.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get you help.
Fully. Yeah.
Yeah. I famously think that the amount of seasons of Grace and Frankie they made was, by the end, it was elder abuse for Jane and Lily. But I think Jane is probably like, oh, better that than this, like making your own project that's like an absolute train wreck.
Totally. And what does she care anyway? She's like mainly trying to be an activist and like be a cool person.
Getting arrested at protests.
Yeah, she's like, I don't give a fuck. I also have never seen Grace and Frankie, so I don't fully know.
You've seen like the trope enough. Yeah. You've seen like, you know, the scene in It's Complicated where like Meryl and her girls like smoke weed.
Mm-hmm. That's that.
That's like Lily Tomlin's whole thing.
Now I'm going to watch the show because I love that scene.
Mm, that's true. I'm selling it.
You really are.
Yeah.
And you just happen to have brought up like my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah. But there is a scene in the doco where like Ben's taking her laptop from her and like writing something. Yes. She's like, no, no, Ben. But like, what was he seeing on that page?
I know.
Distressing.
Give us the unedited like raw script that J-Lo had before Ben started tinkering, because if that's the movie that Ben tinkered with, I want to know what was there before.
I feel like at the core of both of these projects, like merged together, is something. Like if this had been a kind of, I'm J-Lo, I'm back with Ben, I made this album about our love. Here's Ben Affleck and his like box of love letters. Cut to music video. Then in between, it's like, we're trying to write this project together, but I'm trying to get all these celebrities involved. And he just keeps reminding me that it's me that matters. Video, music video.
Totally.
You know, like I think there was a lot of truth in the doco.
Yeah.
And the film was all fucking psycho artifice green screen like AI steampunk and like the like a documentary about celebrities is always going to be interesting,
yeah,
but I think she thinks that her work is more interesting than her life, and it's just so untrue.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Or like your work is not interesting from like it seems like she thinks she's Beyonce, like, you know, doing Coachella. Like, like that, yes. Like, you know, it's the same kind of style of doco, like this idea that this artist is like hard at work and like all like you're watching all the hours that they put in and like how detail oriented they are or whatever. And all of that is meant to, you know, make us
respect
you and be endearing to us or whatever. And it's like, that is true of someone like Beyonce because like her work truly is the thing. It's like only she can do that.
It sets culture as well.
There's nothing that J-Lo does, I would say, that can't be done by somebody else.
No.
Like there were times where I was watching.
Arguably hasn't been done by someone else.
And, yeah, exactly. And better. There were times when I was watching her dance in both movies and I was like, I honestly think I could do that a little bit better than that. Like, and I know that sounds so fucking insane, but please just watch it and tell me if you don't have that moment. Like, there are times where I'm like, you're really not slaying it. Like, especially I would say the triple wedding scene.
Yeah.
She does this, you know, choreography where I'm like, you're not even hitting one of those moves.
Yeah.
Like, not even one. And I reckon I could hit maybe two out of, you know, 250.
That's also the scene where she, in the documentary, we see she's like, it has to be Derek Hough. It has to be Derek Hough dancing with me. And I was like, it has to be this professional dancer with like a famous sister who kind of acts like his wife, like who I think is on Dancing with the Stars, right? And she's like, it has to be him. Like, she's surrounding herself by people she thinks she's on the level with.
Totally. And also, but then in her mind, these people that are on this level, it's like what you're talking about is like someone who's on TV. Like, you're, if you were to respect yourself in a way that maybe could elevate you to the movie star world domination kind of level that you could be at. Instead, she keeps doing things like going and performing on like the Today Show or like, you know, like doing shit that's like fully beneath her at this level of stardom.
Yeah.
But it's because she's so desperate, I think, to prove her artistry, which is absent.
Yeah.
That like she's going to keep kind of coming down to the Dancing with the Stars. Like, I would not be surprised if I saw her on Dancing with the Stars like next year.
No.
Because I don't think she understands how big she is. And I don't think she understands the mechanism of her big. Here's a thing that we should probably touch on is that so much of why she is in this place, I would say, is because her like agent is like her friend from like 35 years ago.
That's the woman like, who's handling the purse strings, right?
Yeah. Like, and then everyone around her is just like, you know, these people that are her friends. So she doesn't have any like hard hitting, crazy, like top of the pack young gun out there, like getting her all the right projects and like moving with the times and making sure.
She doesn't have like a cool A&R person, no. Like getting her in the studio with like cool producers.
No, and no one being like, okay, well, what if you did another movie? But what if the movie wasn't your idea? What if you went with some great director and like turned some shit around? Everyone that's with her is like, what do you want, babe?
Yeah. And she says this and they go, okay.
Yeah. And they're like, we can do that. And yeah. It's like, maybe she doesn't have the best ideas.
Yes.
Maybe she's 50 something and she needs someone else to like tell her what the cultural temperature is because she's not fully tapped in anymore. Or like she can't be because she's so famous and rich.
Yes. And she's also not, it's natural that she's not like aware of why, say, the Eras tour is what it is or why Beyonce.
Yeah, which is why she thinks that Taylor's going to come on her movie, even though she's just.
She thinks they're peers.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's deeply out of touch with like, you're right, the celebrity temperature. And this is something that like the New York Times was doing some really fun coverage of this. Like the Popcast did an episode, I think it was called Are Celebrities Okay? And Wesley Morris also wrote like a review of the film, not the doco, where he says, we've never had the stress of constantly assessing Jennifer Lopez's inflating institutional value because the institutions by and large have ignored her. She attends award shows and despite going conspicuously unawarded, she simply goes on. And because she doesn't have to bear the culture war cross that Taylor Swift and Beyonce do, you'd think she'd be carrying a lighter load. And he also talks about her as like having never been on the cutting edge. Like,
yeah,
she's been in like A-list celebrity circles and making music and releasing stuff for almost 30 years. And he says she's often where music just was and that can leave her stranded the way she is here. Like she's never been on any kind of cutting edge or ahead of any pack. And I think I saw today that this project, like the album that all of this has kind of stemmed from, is performing so badly. Like it debuted at, I think, like number 38 on the Billboard chart. She's doing a massive national tour, which like her co-star Kim Petras is not selling. They've canceled like a dozen cities, just straight up canceled stops. And then mid selling have rebranded this as like a nostalgia tour. So what essentially, I guess what Madonna is doing right now, but it's kind of too late, I think.
This and is also so depressing, Brody. Why are you telling me this? It's so sad.
And it's like she's made this project where she's saying like the only marker of like value for this, like the only thing that's going to tell me if I did well or didn't at all is if I can make this. And Ben's like, yeah, girl, I love you. And she's like, I love you too. And then she goes out and the film premieres and it's psycho. And then the documentary comes out and everyone's like, you're deluded.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't get any kind of critical appreciation. And I don't know how long the kind of I made it because I loved it can keep propelling someone.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, probably forever if she is that. Yeah, if she's as delusional as I think she is. But also, like, the problem is, I think, like, if the people around her ever get weary of this, like, one-woman show that's kind of out of touch, like you said, like you didn't want to say. I do think it's fair to say she's out of touch because I kind of feel like she's never been in touch, but that's okay. Like, you can be out of touch your whole damn life.
Yes.
You still are. She's so not with the rest of the world. That's a beautiful thing. But for some reason, like, the people around her, I feel like, aren't as good. I feel like we've gotten so serious about it.
We have.
Like, we're really upset.
We're
this is actually a different kind of intervention. She's the next.
It's ours. People will call it intervention for us.
Exactly. Yeah, true. I think insane that we haven't mentioned yet that it's a trilogy. The film
I didn't know this.
That film that she made is the first of three, according to her.
No.
Which I don't think is going to be viable now. It's like it was her plan, but I think she thought that she was going to make, 30 mil off her 20 mil film.
So she's Madame Webbed.
Big time.
Okay. The one thing that we came up with before. Actually, we did it. One thing that came into my mind before that I want to ask you, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit. What do you think is the future project for Ben and or Jen in terms of their, like, what this documentary has set up as far as, like, the insight we get into them as, like, a celebrity couple? Because I'm watching this and I'm like, grown up newlyweds, like, get me the reality show.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also like, Ben is like an esteemed director now in a way he wasn't when Gili happened.
Yeah.
He could redeem them both.
I agree.
With a really excellent film that gets her kind of like what Mariah did in Precious, where you were like, that's Mariah Carey because she wasn't wearing eyeliner.
Yeah. Yeah. She'll have her no makeup moment.
Yeah. And she'll win a fucking Oscar for it.
I don't think it's possible because I truly don't think she's got it in her. Mm. But.
She won't want to dance.
Stop her. She will want to be a meek woman. She will refuse to do anything other than being like a meek woman from lowly means who meets somebody who is wealthy and he wants to marry her and she's scared. Mm. She refuses to do anything other than that. I guess, what was that one about her?
Made in Manhattan?
No, the more recent one where she's like a girl boss.
Oh, the backup plan or
something like that. Yeah.
But partway through that, you realize that she was like Vanessa Hudgens' birth mother.
I haven't seen it, so you just ruined it for me.
Oopsie.
I don't know. I mean, whatever they do, I'm going to watch because I hope it's not a reality show because I hope that they're better than that. But I would truly watch that woman do anything.
Same.
Now.
Do you remember, did you ever see the Steve Martin film Shop Girl based on his novel Shop Girl?
Absolutely.
As you were saying, like, a woman from lowly means who meets a rich man, I'm like, what if Ben and J-Lo remade Shop Girl?
They really should. They really should. There's, you know what? We could make a list of movies that they could remake.
Yes.
With the what if they just did fucking, let's get down to it. Just do Casablanca. If you want to be getting off the train into smog so bad, just do Casablanca.
Mm-hmm. Gucci's doing the costumes.
Gucci times Adidas. Yeah. That's the crazy thing is that it's never just Gucci. It's every single thing that she wears is a Gucci it's all Adidas.
Diffusion collapse.
Yeah, it's really wild.
I feel like we covered a lot, but is there anything that we didn't mention that was very important to you about these two films?
Racking my brains right now.
We got through all my notes. Oh, except when I said I love when she wears a Barbra Streisand jumper, which is in the doco.
And it obviously was made 5 seconds ago. It was like, it's Timu. One of those ones that you fully print like with your, and you use your iron to put it on. It's like so weird. Do you know what, actually? We did not talk about how, so the Barbra Streisand tie-in is her in the doco wearing a jumper with Barbra on it. Literally, shout-outs, Barbra. truly one of my favorite people that has ever lived.
Yeah.
But in the movie, there's a scene where, which you mentioned earlier, where she's like lying down on her insane
Gucci couch,
Gucci monogrammed JLo couch, and in the glass house, the second glass house. And she's watching The Way We Were, and she is mouthing the scene. It's a very, you know, it's a classic movie motif. Yeah. Somebody watching a romantic movie and mouthing the words, which tells you what a romantic they are.
Mm-hmm.
But she mouths this whole scene.
All the dialogue, both Robert Redford and Barbara Stanwyck.
And it goes on like I'm going to say like a minute and a half she's mouthing the dialogue. And I'm just thinking like, why?
Yeah.
Why did you do that much?
We also get the exposition of the Zodiacal Council watching that, being like, she's watching this for the fourth night this week.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, do we need her mouthing so much to show how intimate she is with this film if they're saying that?
I honestly reckon like they probably didn't plan for her to mouth that much, but she learnt all of it and she wanted to.
She was like, I'm
a professional. Look at me do this.
I'm an actor.
Yeah, and they're like, babe, you should get on Dub Smash because you would make a fucking killing.
She used TikTok when it was called Musical.ly and it was just mouthing along to
things. She's really practiced.
Yeah, she does that thing that kids on TikTok do, which is when you're mouthing the words of a woman, you wear a tea towel on your head. That's when she's Barbara.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay, Izzy, I asked you to bring some also-alsos for this episode. I annoyingly made all mine JLo related, but I told you that yours could be anything. What is your first one?
My first one is something that I already told you about today, which is sinus flushing. Like,
I'm going to send you some really gruesome videos.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I had a friend recommend it to me. They were like, you should try flushing your sinuses. Like, I don't even really have that much of a problem, but I've had like a bit of a sore face. And she was like, it could be like, you know, a post COVID thing. Mm. And so I was like, cool. And then I bought it at the thingy at the chemist. I always say my chemist warehouse and I always get teased. Chemist warehouse. Shout outs Gamble from Real Housewives of Melbourne, who's married to the owner.
Janet. Gamble's got wolf pup.
Oh my God, so true.
So related though, because he's a doctor.
So long ago.
Yeah.
I've forgotten already. Anyway, yeah, so I got one of those little things and I squished it into my nose in the shower and I was like, this is genius.
Yeah.
It's so cool. It really like, it also, it's kind of like eye drops. Like it doesn't even matter if it's doing anything. It really feels huge.
I've never had any sinus kind of blockages really, unless I have like a cold, but I am obsessed with the content of what comes out of people's heads.
Yep.
I'm obsessed. And they always see it in the sink and then go, in the videos.
I love.
Love.
So I love it.
My first one is kind of related to two films that we've discussed. Made in Manhattan and The Way We Were are both these movies about like women with like very progressive like social values or morals with these men who are much more conservative.
Mm.
And I think of these two films as like a trio along with the third, which is a very long way of saying my recommendation is the film Beautician and the Beast.
Fran Drescher?
Where Fran Drescher gets mistaken for a like very high up school teacher and gets brought to a fictional Eastern European country and has to like teach these children and over the course of the film, like kind of teaches the dictator of this country, who's played by, I think, Timothy Dalton. She shaves his mustache. She looks really sexy. About like, I don't know. She like tells workers to like form a union at one point. It's
my God. This
really
is like
good.
A fever dream coming back to me that like I watched as a kid and I completely forgot.
I'm pretty sure the only way to watch it is on YouTube.
Devo.
Like a ripped version.
God.
Important.
So important.
Yeah.
Okay. My second thing is something that we also already talked about, but not on pod, which was Reality Day, which is having one day a month where you look at no screens, not a single screen. So, I mean, let's say billboards are allowed. LED billboards are allowed.
Are the movies allowed?
No.
No. Okay.
It's, you gotta be like basically in nature, I feel like. But yeah. I mean, like, I guess not. As long as you put your screens down and you're like in your world, you could read some books, you could do whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's inspired by a tweet that went mini viral mm-hmm. last week, I think, where someone was like, I have a friend who does this thing called reality day and she doesn't look at her phone or a computer or whatever. And I was like, that's whatever. And then I sat on it for a second and I was like, that's crazy. Mm. Like, why can't I do that? I would have had to have been maybe 6 the last time I had a reality day.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've been camping.
Well, like when you're on a drive or something.
Mm.
And I guess your phone's just, there's a little screen in a car count. Does SharePlay count?
Yeah.
CarPlay. My next recommendation. It's the song Get Right by J-Lo.
Oh,
from
love.
Her 2001 single. And I read those two words written down and I hear the song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that little hook is crazy.
It's just important to acknowledge the magic that once was, I think.
100%. I mean, I still think it's there. I would go as far as to say, like, I think some of those songs on that new album are good. Mm. Not good, good.
Have you gone and listened to the album?
No, but as you were talking about it before, I was like, that's what I'm going to listen to in the car when I leave. Mm. Because some of those songs I had, yeah, I was like kind of had a little bop going on when I was watching the movie.
I'm just pulling it up because I forget what some of them are called. There's... I also thought that they said something to the effect of like, this is my first album since Ben and I think it must have been since Ben and I got back together, but I interpreted it as since Ben and I first got together. And I was like, first album in like 30 years?
I think that's true. Well, it's the first album in like 20 years, right?
No, she's made several.
Oh.
Because that's what I thought. I was like, okay, oh my God, cut that out. Is her first album. No, I thought this. I watched this entire thing.
I don't want her to know because I know she listens to this podcast. I don't want her to know that I haven't heard a peep from her.
J-Lo, sign up to the Patreon.
Oh no, of course it's not. What about Get On The Floor? Wait, what's it called?
I Lay
On
The Floor. She also wrote I Lay A Puppy. I Lay A Puppy.
Oh,
with French
my
Montana,
God, I
remember?
Hate that song.
So bad. I just know that Kate will also listen to this being like, what is I Lay A Puppy?
Well, Kate, do your homework.
Oh, Broken Like Me.
Oh yeah.
That's a bad song.
That one is bad.
Yeah. All right. So what's your last, also your last recommendation?
Well, I just changed it in midair and it is now because of that conversation. It is Mariah Carey's, most recent album, which is called, I think I can do this if I go into my brain enough, Caution. It's called Caution. And it is like what I imagine J-Lo would think that she's capable of doing. Like, I wouldn't say Caution by Mariah Carey, like, rocked the charts, but it was definitely, like, kind of on, like, a down-low sort of success where people were like, hell yeah, like, she still has it. And she was the, like, you know, majority writer across every song.
Oh.
So she's, like, very much so still got it. And it was so good and I loved it. And
2018, okay.
Many of my friends listened to it. Nonstop. And so if you do, as a listener, happen to go and listen to This Is Me Now, the album, and you're not happy and you don't agree with me and think that there are good songs, then go listen to Caution by Mariah Carey because it truly fucking bangs. It's so good.
Okay, I love this and I will be listening as soon as we're done.
Great.
My last one is Amy Odell's newsletter, which is called Back Row, which Amy Odell wrote the Anna Wintour biography a few years ago, and her newsletter is really good, but she did, conveniently for me, she released a Substack like yesterday, all about J-Lo's brand. Oh, that's where I found out about like the tour being cancelled and rebranded and stuff. She said like the title of the newsletter is J-Lo's brand has been damaged for a long time. And she described her as a case study of a celebrity that has failed to catch the shifts of this decade, which kind of speaks to what we were talking about before. It opens with the image of her beauty products, which I didn't even know existed, literally gathering dust on Sephora shelves.
Oh my God.
Jenny.
Well, I came here to paint a picture of a, you know, tortured artistic genius, but we've left with a woman, the woman that she was describing. She has dirt all over her face. She is, her hair's all messy and she's stuck in the Bronx somewhere.
She's just running around like a wild girl. And you know what? I'm happy that she is.
That's what she wanted.
It's where she's most comfortable. Mm. I'm sorry we went down a dark, dark path here. but thank you so much.
Thank you.
For inspiring this JLo journey and also joining me on it. If people want to follow you, do you have anything to plug? I mean, they can still go and buy sunbathing if they haven't already.
Yeah, if you haven't, go get it because, I mean, money reasons. No.
It's also very good. It's a very good book.
Thank you so much. No, I have nothing to plug. I just, you go and live, whoever you are, go and live your life and enjoy it. But, and don't follow me because there's nothing to gain from that.
Have your reality day.
Have your reality day. That's for the rest of your life. That's my plug. And like, thank God you are not $20 million in debt to Amazon Prime and Jeff Bezos. Like just sit there and bask in the glow of that truth. Because we can all say that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really special.
That's our truths, is that we're not.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Izzy. Thank you for listening. As always, thanks to Harvey Sutherland for our theme song and Samuel Hodge for our artwork. All right, bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.